Michael Bloomberg on a Friday from far away Sun Valley, Idaho. Hello there. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a long flight.
Yeah, it is. So what's going on? What's going on out there?
There's a conference every year that I go to. A lot of people, a lot of companies here, and it's pretty good for business in New York. Most of the biggest companies are New York companies, or most of them, and I would think a good 3/4 of them have business in New York. So it's a chance to show the flag and catch up with what's going on in the world. Some of the panels are really interesting and very germane to what's going on with terrorism, what's going on with technology and government. We have Governor Christie is giving a presentation this morning with the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel. I'm going to go listen to in a few minutes.
They won't say anything. I'm kidding.
They're not opinionated. I think that's fair to say.
Right, exactly. So that'll be rough and tumble.
I had a chance to talk to the governor a little bit and to Rahm Emanuel last night, and it's just interesting to see what people are doing elsewhere.
All right, here at home, let's talk about that. First and foremost, your reaction to your decision and the chancellor's to, at least for the time being, not rehab the 24 schools you've been trying to
close. Well, we don't have any choice. We have to go to court. The arbitrator ruled that we couldn't. He said, oh, you guys don't like, all you're trying to do is to get rid of bad teachers, as one of my daughters would say, da.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, if the kids aren't learning, of course that's what you're trying to do, and you do it. We have in the contract, there's a procedure that has been there for years. We think the arbitrator does not have the right to do this. We're in court, and if we get a ruling in our favor, we will close the 24 schools and reopen them. In the meantime, it leaves us in a very difficult position because we've hired teachers for these spots, but they don't know whether they're going to have them. And the teachers who were going to have to go into the excess pool and then look for jobs elsewhere in the system, they clearly understand that the principals they worked for didn't think that the performance of the students under their tutelage was acceptable. But I think the real issue here is what the arbitrator did. There's roughly 30-odd thousand students in these 24 schools, and those kids are, if we lose in court, are going to go another year without getting an education. And unfortunately, John, as we all know, they never, ever catch up.
I talked with...
We're playing with kids' lives here, and how the arbitrator could do this, I don't know, but that's not the issue anymore. The issue is trying to convince the court, and it's very difficult to get courts to overturn arbitrators' decisions, but we'll see what happens. We've opened something like 140 new schools, or maybe closed 140 schools and reopened them, and anybody that thinks that New York school system isn't better than it was, dramatically better, should come out here to Sun Valley and listen to what's going on in other cities. We are the poster child for what to do right. And I think the thing that came out again and again, America's competitiveness, the future of America, is in our public school system, and we are falling behind nationwide just as fast as we can possibly do it. It's almost deliberate what we're doing, hurting ourselves versus other countries who are focusing on education. In New York, we focused on it, and some people just don't ever want it to change.
Your reaction to an IBO study that 70% don't improve?
It doesn't make any sense. I think the answer to that, just ask the parents. They vote with their feet. It's just the way, the methodology they did. You can get any kind of result if you want, if you just pick the right group, and I think that's exactly what they did. So,
talked to Merrill Tisch this morning, and, of course, she is after the two mics, you and Michael Mulgrew, to come up with a deal on evaluation.
Well, we're not going to come to a deal on an evaluation unless it's a deal that actually evaluates and lets you do something without if the teacher does not perform. We have big investments in our teachers. We want to give them all the help we can and train them. But if they cannot, in the end, do the job, then they just can't be in front of in the classroom. And when you have a system like we've always had, where they can grieve and sue and arbitrate, and it goes on and on for years, I mean, you've described the procedure. It's almost impossible to remove teachers from the front of the classroom and out of the school system. And we've just got to do something about this. And I'd love to see the union be willing to do it. But we're not going to sign on to anything that is not a real evaluation system with real teeth that you can really do something with and do it in a reasonable time frame. Some of these things that will drag on for years, literally years. You just cannot leave kids in front of a teacher who can't do the job for years. And keep in mind, we have 75,000 teachers in our system. They are the best group of teachers anybody's ever put together. And they are embarrassed by this defense of people who touch students inappropriately, this defense of teachers. It's a tiny, tiny percentage. But as we all know, a tiny, tiny percentage sets the reputation for all of us. And I think an awful lot of the teachers in the school system are so embarrassed by this. The union just keeps defending and defending behavior that's just unconscionable by a tiny fraction of the teachers.
Talking to Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the phone this morning, Police Commissioner Kelly this week coming out strongly saying, I see demonstrations constantly for everything, including the size of soda cups, but I don't hear enough noise coming from neighborhoods where violence is
on the
upswing.
They did have a million big gulp march.
Yeah, 20 people showed up.
Yeah, I think most of those were reporters covering the few people. Look, number one, let's start out with this. Ray Kelly is right. And he's also the best police commissioner the city has ever had. And I don't think anyone's done more to save lives than Ray Kelly. No one has done more to take guns off the streets than Ray Kelly. No one has done more to improve community police relations than Ray Kelly. And it's working. If you take a look, crime is down 34% compared to 10 years ago. We're the safest big city in the nation. And we're just not going to walk away from what got us there. And we're going to do everything we can to keep driving crime down. You just have to be able to go out and sit on your doorstep and not worry about a stray bullet. You've got to be able to walk down the street and not have to look over your shoulders. That's the essence of what America is. It's the essence of freedom. If you don't have that kind of security, all of the other freedoms that we've had young men and women fight and die for the last 230-odd years really are meaningless. And I know there's always going to be critics. That's life. But just take a look at other cities. Chicago this year, and I don't mean to pick on Chicago because Rahm Emanuel is here and he's a good friend, and he really has worked hard. But they have many more murders than we do, and we have three times as many people. We're on track this year to something like less than 500 murders, and we've been below 600 murders in every year for the past decade in recorded history. We'd never had years that safe. If we had Chicago's murder rate this year, instead of 500, we'd have 1,300 murders. If we had murders in Philadelphia, people hold it up, and they've got a great mayor who came and campaigned that he would put in stop and frisk, and crime went down, and then when they had to take it out, crime went back up. But if we had Philadelphia's rate, we would have 1,700 murders. If we had Baltimore's rate, I think the number is something like 2,500 murders. Detroit, if we had Detroit's rate, we'd have 4,000 murders. Or New Orleans, something close to 5,000 murders. We used to be like those cities. We used to be one of the murder capitals of the United States, and we just are not going back, at least not while I am here.
I understand Philadelphia is reinstating stop and frisk, a modified version of it, but after the courts banned it, they are putting it back in. So got the message.
The bottom line is there are a handful of bad people in the world. There always have been and always will be. In New York City, they tend to be young males, and we're working. We've got this program with $127 million. I gave $30 million of my own money. George Soros gave $30 million. The city put in $67 million. And we're trying to work with all sorts of other programs that might help them. But in the end, if the kid is on the street with a gun, we've got to get that gun out of his hands, and we've got to make the kids believe that the likelihood of being stopped is so great that they shouldn't carry a gun. Because if you have a gun in your pocket, the likelihood of you taking it out on the spur of the moment when you just get annoyed about something is so great, you just can't have it. And
I
we're
must
just
admit,
not going to do it.
I had a very interesting conversation with Jamani Williams earlier this week on this question, and I maintained to him and I maintained to Eric Adams, state senator, that I think that they almost underscore what Kelly was saying when the first reaction is criticism of the authorities, rather than acceptance of the issues.
Well, look, the statistics are clear. When you have a murder, we can see who's getting murdered. And unfortunately, virtually 90% of all murder victims are young male minority kids. They have lives. Their families are left. We have to do something. We just got to do something about saving and preventing this kind of carnage. And the people that Williams and Adams are talking about are the very people that need the defense. They live in the communities where there are too many guns and too many shootings, and we've got to do something about it. And I sympathize with Ray's frustration. Everything the police do is wrong to certain groups of people, and they can't possibly win. I don't know who wants to take us back to the bad old days, but I can tell you it's not Ray Kelly and it's not Michael Bloomberg, and we're not going to do it.
All right. You and I have talked about this before. The city's Board of Elections has notified Albany that they're not going to be able to conduct next year's mayoral ballot because of the machines.
I saw that. You know, it comes back to the selection of the voting machines when there was an argument advanced by somebody that you can't rely on computers because they can be hacked. Well, you know, nobody can guarantee that the computers that run our world won't be hacked. We work very hard to make them safe, but the old machines you couldn't hack, and real computers you can't hack very easily. But what is clear is having pieces of paper that you pass around and can deliberately hide if you want or replace with others, this is just craziness in this day and age. People that don't trust computers, don't turn on your lights because they might not be there. Don't get in a car. Don't get in an airplane. Don't get in your elevator. There's nothing you do in this day and age that doesn't have computers.
All right, maybe I'm a little sensitive to my next question because it's in my neighborhood right here. I have to step over them. The Occupy Wall Streeters, Occupy Trinity Churchers, this time around sleeping on the streets all day long. How long are you going to put up with that?
We have to obey the law. The issue really is, it's tricky. They have a right to be in the streets. They don't have a right to block the streets. And we're not going to let them shut down this city. And don't worry about it.
Okay, I'll try not to, even though I have to step over them every morning. It's annoying. Let's see here. How about Vanderbilt Avenue? You're gonna shut that one down, and when?
Bob Steele and the Department of City Planning are working on a plan to allow developers to build more big buildings in Midtown, because a lot of the Midtown buildings are very old and they have low ceilings and they don't attract not suitable for the kinds of big businesses that we want to come here. We've been developing Hudson Yards, which is going to give a lot of opportunities for people to build. It's a phenomenal place. And but all of these areas, we've got to worry about how people get around. And one of the ways is to improve the pedestrian flow in the neighborhood and provide open space that's not overly dense. And Vanderbilt is not a heavily trafficked street, so converting it to pedestrian plazas is just one option they're looking at. I don't know whether it'll come out that way. But it's kind of hard to argue that the businesses and the people who use Times Square, Herald Square along Broadway haven't been really turned out. That turned out to be phenomenal for all of them. Building rents, my recollection is store rents on Broadway between Times Square and Herald Square are up 200-250% because there's so many people that come there. And it certainly has not hurt traffic, and Vanderbilt may very well be one of those. It's interesting. We get lots of requests from around the city from other neighborhoods to close streets. Unfortunately, you can't close a street if it's going to impact all the other traffic. Vanderbilt does not. And thanks to Jeanette Sedekon's vision, which I never would have believed, but she's 100% right, closing Broadway has actually certainly not hurt traffic flow, and in some areas improved it.
Any chance that the cab fares going up 17% in September could be linked or grease the ways a little bit for your outer borough taxi plan?
Really has nothing to do with it. This is we haven't had a raise in something like 8 years. The drivers who have to pay for gas and that sort of stuff can't make a living. It's in everybody's interest to give the drivers a raise, and that's what we've done here. The owners who always want more money, just take a look at the value of medallions. That's as good a way as to measure whether they need more money or not, and those are at record highs.
Any idea when the bikes go into effect?
Not yet. Still working. Trying to get it done. There's like with any big system, there's always things that you've got to make sure work before you turn it on. We're not going to turn it on until it's ready. And it's fascinating. The people who did not want bicycle lanes at all now screaming, well, where are they? Where are they? I want them quickly.
And I want one in my neighborhood, probably, right?
Yeah, but it has been, I think it's fair to say there's no city, certainly none that I've heard of, where they didn't put in a bicycle sharing program in any big city that hasn't been phenomenally successful.
Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Manhattan said the city of New York cannot put up those posters, those diseased lung posters,
yeah,
sales places against smoking.
Well, listen, the court has to decide what the First Amendment says. I think that the argument is it takes away the rights or it forces people to say something. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense to me, particularly when smoking is going to kill something like 400,000 people in the United States in the near future. A billion people this century are going to die. We've got to do something, and nobody's a bigger defender of people's rights than I am, but you also have a right to we have an obligation to inform people when they're doing something that is hazardous to their health. So we'll find another ways to do it.
Has your phone rung off the hook on the decision to eliminate the active participation of politics in the 9/11 ceremonies?
No, I you know.
Have you heard from? I mean, you must.
No, I have not gotten one voicemail or one email about it. So, no, I think. I talked to Governors Cuomo and Christie and said, look, you have to evolve. We've done the same thing 11 times. We had a six-month anniversary and then 10 years, 10 annual ones. And now people can congregate on the Memorial Plaza. Hopefully we'll all get to resolve all these things and get the museum going again. But in any case, we've done the same thing for 11 times. You always want to change. And I think it's... on the plaza, it's something more solemn about it than when we were on the side of the plaza or in the Zuccotti Park. And this is something that both governors, when I talked to them, seemed to think made some sense, too. And the Memorial Foundation wanted to do this after surveying lots and lots of stakeholders, of family members and educators, and I think it'd be very moving.
What's going to happen with the museum? Is the deal done? Are they going to get back to work here soon?
We're going to get a deal done. I don't think there's any question about that. You got to remember, John. I keep saying this. This is the most complex construction project in the history of the world, and in terms of density and environment and the politics of it and the funding of it. We've lived through boom times and recession time, and everybody wants something, and they want it today, and they don't want it to cost. But the real world is that somebody's got to pay. And I think that what's going to happen is, and the only thing that matters, is when it's all done, and then you give it a few years or a decade, and you look back and you say, did they do the right thing? And I'm convinced that the answer will be a resounding yes.
All right, it's breakfast time. It's almost Christy Emanuel time, so
I'll
let you go.
I will see you next week.
We look forward to it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate it. Michael Bloomberg, enjoy yourself out there in Sun Valley. 6 before 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock in the morning.